This is Stay Happily Married number 103, Stop the Fighting.
Welcome to Stay Happily Married.
Happily Married. Happily Married.
Your source for weekly updates on the latest tips and advice to build a happy and healthy marriage.
Today's episode of Stay Happily Married is brought to you by The Rosen Law Firm. For more information, visit us at rosen.com.
Rose, and I'm your host today. Welcome to the show. I am here by Skype with Paul Schaefer. Paul has been a professional counselor for about 25 years. He's helped individuals and couples with some of the toughest issues imaginable. He's done work not only in an office setting, but in hospitals and in prisons as well. He opened up his own practice. It's called Right Choices Counseling back in 2004, and he just moved his office from Davidson, North Carolina, over to Huntersville, North Carolina. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, I am really glad you could join us. You know, today we're going to dig in and talk about how conflict presents itself in a marriage and the problems that arise when communication problems become a real stumbling block for couples. And I know that you have written quite a bit about this topic. Your book is Conflict Resolution for Couples. What sparked that?
Well, there was a couple things. Part of it had to do with, because I was doing a lot of couples work, there was a lot of repetition of the material that I was using with clients. When I first start counseling, the first phase of it is an education phase. And so I was continuing to share the same information over and over, and it was kind of like, well, wouldn't it be nice to actually have all this written down that I could just hand to the client in some readily, easily available form that they could take out into the real world with them. So it's in some ways it was kind of a mixed approach. It was industrious in that I wrote the book and kind of lazy to save me a lot of work in the process.
Well, yeah, but you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of books are written sort of in the ivory tower, you know, and it's like your book was tested with real people and you were getting feedback every week in your sessions. What was the response to what kind of feedback did you get?
Well, it's funny. There were a couple different things I noticed with it. Well, first off, the clients who liked to read responded well to the book. The other clients that were used to lighter fare or got some of the easier self-help stuff had a little bit more difficult time because the book's very content heavy. But it was interesting, too, just in terms of for some people – some concepts would be, you know, a profound truth. And for others, it, you know, left them totally unmoved. So it was very interesting what was some of the great spots for some people were the weak spots for others and vice versa.
You know, I can imagine the book working in a certain way with people that you're seeing, you know, on a regular basis, who are your clients, your patients. How has it gone over with people that, I mean, obviously you've got a lot of people reading it. You can't see, you can only see so many people. How is it done out there as a standalone book, distinct from being involved in counseling with you?
Sure. Well, at this point, the book was published in 2005. And since then, it's gone through two updates about every 2 years. And the updates are for a couple reasons. One, because I, in the same way that with the counseling I do, it's always, even what I do is in progression. There's better ways I learn of doing things. There's better ways of expressing things or presenting things. And I wanted to update that information in the book as well. So far, so good. I think the response has usually been that it's user-friendly and that there's definitely a logical progression to how the book progresses. But one of the other things, too, with why I wrote the book, I have a 14-year-old daughter. And it's kind of like one of those summaries of if you could share any information with your kids that you could for the rest of their life. You know, at 14 years old, I'm not sure how much she really retains when I share with her at this point. But the idea of capturing that information and for her later on in her own relationships and her own marriage down the road was kind of a cool idea.
That's really cool. Yeah, that is a terrific idea. Now, you know, I mean, if I go to a counselor, you know, I want to believe that I am a unique and beautiful snowflake, and that my problem, I'm the only person in the world that has my issues, you know, that this couldn't possibly be happening to anyone else. But when you sit down and you write a book about resolving conflict for couples, obviously you have to have found commonalities, things that we're all experiencing. And I'm wondering, you know, in your practice and day to day, the stuff that was the meat for writing this book, what did you see in terms of what the conflicts, you know, look like between couples? What was that all about?
Sure. Well, yeah, it is kind of, I guess it's a mixed experience in terms of finding out that you're not all that as unique as you thought. There are a lot of common factors to resolution. In fact, there's a book that I've been sitting on until I find the right publisher. It's called Any Marriage's Essential Top 10. And the idea of the top 10 is that there are 10 common factors that I kept running into again and again with different couples. And we're going to be talking today about reactivity. But what's interesting to me is each of those 10 factors contribute to a couple, to a relationship becoming reactive. Let me just give you an idea of if I take five of the top 10, one of the first ones would be overly rigid role expectations. You know, just the idea that couples going into the relationship, if they see the relationship as being static, that it is what it is from the very beginning and it's always going to be that way, and a husband's supposed to be this and a wife's supposed to be that, it doesn't recognize that relationships are a progression.
Right.
And that they change over time. And that the needs of the relationship change. If you add kids to the picture, if you change jobs, if you move, you know, the needs of the relationship shift for a while. And if the relationship is stuck in these rigid roles, then it starts to grind down. There has to be a degree of flexibility that goes along with embracing change. You know, as time passes.
This is your number one on your list of things really that lead to conflict? I mean, you're, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the top five for me.
Right.
One of the others would be ineffective accountability. You know, couples have to wrestle with the balance between grace versus accountability. You know, the things that you just have to learn to accept versus the things that require change. And for a lot of couples, they don't know how to approach accountability. You know, either they avoid it because I don't want to nag, you know, or they approach it in a very judging, very rejecting way that just pushes the partner away. You know, so knowing how to be able to approach each other about the health of the relationship, which is really what they're talking about, is a very important thing.
So what's an example of that? I mean, I sort of, you know, the number one, this idea of the of overly rigid role expectations, that seems pretty easy for me to get. You know, I do think a lot, I mean, that we talk about that. You know, we expected one thing, it turns out it's another. You know, that, and I do think a lot of us are stuck in the idea of maybe what our parents did or whatever. You know, we have those role expectations. But the accountability is a fairly new one for me. And so give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, one of the routines, there's basically three routines that I try to teach couples in couples counseling. But one of the big ones is there needs to be some sort of accountability routine, you know, so that there's a platform already established where the couple on a regular basis can sit down and just kind of talk about the state of the relationship. You know, where are things at this point? And it's a balanced exercise. It's not just in terms of, it's not in terms of how you failed me or how you screwed up. It's in terms of what's working and what's not. You know, so it's giving recognition for the energy that's going into the relationship and, you know, providing strokes for each other, which helps them be able to hear some of the criticisms, you know, that follow. And criticisms in terms of healthy stuff, like, you know, we need to take a look at our timelines, you know, because we haven't been spending enough time together, you know, and it's just trying to share information in a way that it's not a rejection. It's just information. You know, that this hasn't been working for us this past week. Let's look at what we can do different next week. There'd be a better fit.
Okay, that makes sense. So, okay, so those are your top two. What's number three on your list of the top?
Another big one is lack of true intimacy. There's just the idea that folks go into a relationship thinking the relationship is all about the getting the chores done, holding down a job, raising the kids. And that's the work of the relationship. That's the checklist. Okay. But that's not the actual connection. You know, with when you're talking about true intimacy, you're talking about, you know, what are your goals for the relationship? What does the future look like? What are you guys working towards, you know, together? Where would you like to be 10 years from now, 20 years from now? What are your hopes and dreams? What are your fears and anxieties? You know, and it's the idea of continuing to have a courting relationship in the marriage, you know, even though you're already married. You know, the dating process still continues. You came together because of the fun that you had, how enjoyable it was. But if you don't continue to be having fun, to be continuing to have the play, then the relationship becomes all about work. And once again, it starts to grind down.
Right. That leads to conflict. Yeah. What's number four?
Number four is a tough one. It's probably one of the toughest ones I run into. It's differing perceptions of reality. It's when you have a couple that chronically gets into these arguments because one person's perception of what happened is very different than what the partner's perception is. You know, well, you said this and you said that. Well, no, that's not what I said. I said this, you know, and how you debate whose memory is best, you know, whose recall was right. You know, those are some very difficult things because for there are some people that, particularly the more feeling based they are, the more emotional they are, the more distorted the recall can be. But it's difficult to get them to recognize. Nobody likes to think that their recall is bad. You know,
right.
Nobody likes to think that how I remember things isn't quite the way it happened. But if you're approaching as a couple, the both of you, you know, have some of those faulty ways of remembering, you remember what's most important to you, you know, and the things that stood out that were either the most hurtful or the most critical or whatever, you know, there's ways around it, but that's a difficult one.
Now and so what's the fifth one? I want to get to that, but then I got another question for you.
Mm-hmm. The fifth one is lack of emotional maturity or poor character.
Mm.
This isn't so much a dynamic with the relationship as the individual. You know, when you've got somebody, in terms of emotional maturity, let me tell you what I mean by it. Emotional immaturity is somebody where the feelings dictate the choices. If I feel angry, I go off. If I feel depressed, I act depressed. If I feel anxious, I have a panic attack. You know, the feelings are calling all the shots. So the idea of emotional maturity is learning to guard or guide our thinking, as well as choosing behaviors, healthy behaviors that help direct the feelings rather than the feelings directing us. And it's a tough one because it requires a degree of discipline that you just don't, it doesn't come overnight. You know, it takes a lot of practice. You know, emotional maturity character is something that you develop, and it can be a slow process, particularly if you don't have somebody to model it for you.
Right, right. Makes sense. So these are the things that you started, and you said they're actually, this is your top five. You really got a list of 10.
Yeah, 10.
Okay. And this is the next book is what you're telling me.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
So these are the sorts of things, though, that enabled you to write about conflict resolution because you could see these common threads in that are the root of all conflict, I guess. Is that kind of where we're going with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, each of these are factors that lead to the couple becoming what I call reactive.
Right. Right. So, okay. And you keep using that word and I want to ask you about that. Okay. So reactive, what is that? Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, the idea of a reactive couple is kind of the worst case scenario for a relationship. It's one of the most serious types of dysfunctional communication. The idea is that you've got a couple who reacts to each other's reactions. In other words, each person keeps waiting for the other person to do the right thing. And if they're not going to do it, then I'm not going to do it. And it's funny because there's a bit of a paradox with it that we, in most arguments, we're trying to gain some degree of control in the argument, you know, whether it's steering it in the direction we want it to go or to make our point, to win the argument, whatever. But reactive couples are always giving their control away, you know, rather than, you know, they're losing their temper. They're trying to dominate the conversation by talking over the other person or whatever, but it's their feelings are running the conversation. They're no longer actually intellectually moving the conversation in a healthy direction to a healthy resolution.
Because they're kind of losing it, right? I mean, is that what you're – yeah, okay.
Yeah, so for a lot of couples, it's pointing out, you know, what are you trying to accomplish here? You know, and if what they're trying to accomplish is to have some control over the conversation in hopefully a positive way, it's helping them to see that that's not the way to do it. You know, you're not getting what you want. It's reality therapy 101. You know, it's how's that working for you? Well, it's not.
Right.
So at what point are you going to try something different?
Right. Yeah, you know, that it's fascinating you say that because I see that becoming reactive. I see it less in my life with my wife than I do at work. I mean, I, you know, and it's true. It's like once somebody steps over that line, they really have lost they have given away their control. I mean, I think you're nailing it exactly. And thankfully I don't have that very often anyway go on at home. But boy, for me, you're hitting the nail on the head with what I see in the office sometimes. I guess you see this in all kinds of relationships.
Sure. I mean, it's styles tend to cross scenarios. In other words, if you have an aggressive style of communication, you tend to be aggressive, you know, in the work situation, you know, as a parent, you know, with your partner, with your friends, whatever. If you have more of a passive style, that tends to be reflective as well. I mean, there are some aspects of this that are specific just to couples. You know, because with friends or with employees, fellow workers, whatever, there's always this degree of distance we can have from them just because we can always rationalize, well, they don't really know us, you know, or they don't know us, you know, if they reject us or they criticize us, we can look at it as like, well, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt that they didn't really understand the situation or whatever. But when it's our partner, you know, who supposedly does know us so well and is still rejecting us or criticizing us or whatever, it's a lot harder to deal with because it's so much more personal.
Right. So when, you know, you're doing your work, I mean, obviously you know the source of the conflict and you know, you're digging into that and you've got this person who is becoming reactive in the conflict. Have you got a system or a plan for how you help to break that pattern and how to get somebody back on track?
Sure. Well, a lot of it at the beginning is helping them understand the dysfunctional pattern. You know, it's that education of what they do wrong in order for them to be aware of what they need to do right. You know, and it's understanding that a lot of the reactive cycle is you're going with instinct. You know, you're doing what comes naturally, and that's why it's so difficult to shift because the conflict resolution isn't natural. What you're being asked to do in order to resolve conflict is to not attack. You know, to not run away.
Right.
You know, but to stay there and work it out, which for most folks is not comfortable, you know. So for a lot of folks, it's learning how to tolerate discomfort in order to be able to work things out. But the idea of things being reactive is that it's because it's instinct, it's fight or flight. You know, it's either attack or withdraw, and all those are all ways that we try to self-protect. You know, so it's teaching people to try to be vulnerable rather than self-protect if you're really going to get at what needs to be worked out. With reactions, what we're typically advertising is our anger. You know, even if we're withdrawing and we're just holding that anger to ourselves, it's still the anger that we're most in touch with. But we're usually only angry because we've been hurt. You know, it's usually because we care about this person and they've done something that was either hurtful or neglectful or whatever. But that's hardly ever what actually gets talked about. You know, what gets displayed is our rejection of them because we feel rejected, you know, and the only way to start moving past some of that reactive cycle is to go the opposite direction, you know, rather than covering up and pushing them away, trying to draw closer by actually getting to the core of what's going on with us, that we've been hurt and this is why.
Right. That just makes a lot of sense. And what you really, you know, so I feel like what we've done now is you have really made it clear to me that you get it in terms of where people are coming from and how they're reacting. And I can tell we're right on the verge of getting into how do you fix it? And how do you solve it? And I'm looking at the clock and it's like, we're out of time. And so I'm beg you to, do another show with me where we just run through step by step how you solve this conflict and what your system is for doing that, because I think that would be tremendously helpful to people. Are you able to do that?
Yep, sure. Sounds good to me.
Fantastic. Then let's wrap up now. We'll schedule our next one. Let me just remind folks about who you are and what you're doing and where they can catch up with you. Paul's practice, his website is rightchoicescounseling.com. You can also reach his office. The number is 704-578-2725. And Paul, thank you so much for being a part of the show. And I'm really looking forward to digging into the meat of this thing in what we'll call part two. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening in today. I promise you, we will dig into the details of how to resolve these problems with Paul. Great program today. And I think hearing the solutions will be even more enlightening and exciting. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that you will join us next time. In the meantime, if you have comments you'd like to and feedback you'd like to give us, let me give you the number. It's 919-256-3083. We have a comment line set up with a voicemail box there for you. You can also email us at comments@stayhappilymarried.com. Let us know how we're doing. Give us any feedback that you can. We very much appreciate it, and we use it to build new shows as we go forward. I'm Lee Rosen. Until next time, stay happily married.
Thank you for joining us today on Stay Happily Married.
Happily Married. Happily Married.
If you'd like more information, please visit us on the web at stayhappilymarried.com. We would love to hear your feedback or comments. Please email us at comments@stayhappilymarried.com or call us at 919-256-3083. Until next time, best wishes.